the world's great novels. Her short 30 years were spent in an almost cloistered simplicity in the moorlands of England. Yet her rich and somber imagination created its own world and one of the most compelling novels in the English language. The National Broadcasting Company brings you the first in a four-part version of Emily Bronte's Wuthering Heights, another in our series of books that live the world's great novels.
I leased Thrushcross Grange for a year because I wanted to escape from the stir of London society. But even so, I was astonished to find that there could be in England such a solitary spot as these bleak moorlands. It was partly from neighborliness, and I must admit partly from curiosity, that I determined to visit my landlord, whose abode is some 4 miles distant from the Grange where I live. At my first glimpse of Wuthering Heights, I stopped dead. My impulse was to turn my back on its somber foreboding and retreat to the cheerfulness of my own house. The gray mist that rose about it seemed like giant cobwebs caught in the turrets. But I continued my way toward the massive door with its grotesque carvings. On the crumbling cornerstone, I detected the date 1500 and the name Hareton Earnshaw. I knocked. The sensation I had upon first seeing Wuthering Heights was repeated when I looked into the cold, dark eyes of my landlord. Mr. Heathcliff?
Hmm?
I'm Mr. Lockwood, your new tenant, sir. I do myself the honor of calling as soon as possible upon my arrival to make your acquaintance.
You should not have come out on such a day. A snowstorm is beginning.
Well, now that I'm here, I hope I'm not inconveniencing you.
I do not allow anyone to inconvenience me. Walk in.
Thank you. Fine dogs. Come here, fellows.
Let them alone. They're not kept for pets.
Oh, right.
Go in there by the fire. I'll join you presently.
Without another word, my host strode off and left me, and though I felt a little strange walking into the parlor alone, I found the thought of a fire too inviting to remain in the drafty corridor. Within the room sat a roughly dressed young man and a young woman with blonde curls, whom a servant referred to as the Mrs. They were as inhospitable as Heathcliff. The young woman was preparing tea. May I reach that canister for you, Mrs. Heathcliff? The mantle's rather high.
I don't want your help. I can get it for myself.
Well, I beg your pardon.
Well, you asked for tea.
I should be glad to have a cup.
Were you asked?
No, but aren't you the proper person to ask me?
Hareton, if you laugh again, I'll throw this kettle at you.
Oh, no, you won't.
Oh, I won't?
Psst. Here he comes.
The storm has set in good and proper now. I told you were a fool to ramble around in such weather, Mr. Lockwood.
I can't understand why.
You run a risk of being lost in the marshes. People familiar with these moors often miss their way on such evenings. And I can tell you there's no chance of a change at present.
Well, perhaps I can get a guide among your servant lads. And he might stay at the Grange until morning. Could you spare me one?
I could not.
Oh, indeed? Well, then, it seems I must trust to my own sagacity. Or good luck.
How long does it take you to make tea? Why can't you be a little useful?
Is he to have any?
Get it ready, will you?
Hmm.
And stop staring at me or you shall leave the room.
An austere silence prevailed while we drank our tea. I thought perhaps my unannounced visit had caused the cloud and that it was therefore my duty to dispel it. They could not every day sit so grim and taciturn. I ventured to speak. It's strange how custom can mold our tastes and ideas. Many could not imagine the existence of happiness in a life of such complete exile from the world as you spend, Mr. Heathcliff. Yet I'll venture to say that, surrounded by your family and with your amiable lady as the presiding genius over your home and heart, you're as...
My amiable lady? Where is she, my amiable lady?
Why, Mrs. Heathcliff here. Your wife, of course.
Mrs. Heathcliff is my daughter-in-law.
Ah, oh, certainly, I see now. This young man to my right is the favored possessor of such a lovely person.
I'm married to him.
Ah? Her husband?
Ah. Unhappy is your conjecture, sir. We neither of us have the privilege of owning your lovely person. Her mate is dead. I said she was my daughter-in-law. Therefore, she must have married my son.
Oh, and this young man is...
Not my son, assuredly.
My name is Ayrton Earnshaw, and I'd counsel you to respect it.
I meant no disrespect, and my condolences because of your son.
You may save them. Another cup of tea?
No, thank you. Excuse me.
I see you're observing the snowstorm yourself now, Mr. Lockwood.
Yes, it is coming down heavily now. I don't think it possible for me to get home now without a guide. The roads must be buried already.
Ayrton, be sure to drive those dozen sheep into the barn porch. They'll be covered if left in the fold all night. And put a plank before them.
But see here, what am I to do?
I'm sure I don't know. I must look to the cattle. Come, Ayrton.
Mrs. Heathcliff, you must excuse me for troubling you. But I presume, because I feel that with your face you can't help being good-hearted.
You presume a great deal.
Won't you point out some landmarks by which I may know my way home? I've no more idea how to get there than you would know how to get to London.
Take the road you came.
Then if you hear of me being discovered dead in a bog or a pit full of snow, your conscience won't whisper that it's partly your fault?
Why should it be? I cannot escort you. He won't let me go to the end of the garden wall.
But I only want you to tell me the way, not to show it. Or else to persuade Mr. Heathcliff to give me a guide.
He would do just the opposite of whatever I asked. Besides, who is there to guide you? The only persons here are himself, Earnshaw, Zillah the cook, old Joseph and I.
Are there no boys at the farm?
None.
Well, then it follows that I shall be compelled to stay here.
That you will have to settle with your host. I have nothing to do with it.
I hope this will be a lesson to you to make no more rash journeys on these hills. As to staying here, I don't keep accommodations for visitors. You must share a bed with Hatton or Joseph if you stay.
I can sleep in a chair in this room.
No, no. A stranger is a stranger, be he rich or poor. It will not suit me to permit anyone the range of the place while I am off guard.
Well, I assure you, sir, bad weather or no, I have no intention of staying in a place where my honesty is doubted.
You are quite free to go.
And I shall. Good evening.
I'll go with him as far as the park.
You'll go with him to the devil. Who would there be to look after the horses?
Get away from me, you monster!
Don't! No, not! Down there! Run!
My
down
arm.
There!
It's got the most of the bone.
That will teach you to make such hurried departures, Mr. Lockwood.
I could have been killed.
You look heartier than that.
What is all this commotion about, sir? Huh. Are we going to murder folk in our very doorstone?
Our guest has not been murdered, Zillah, though he's lost a bit of blood. But I'm afraid we'll be forced to give him shelter.
Don't think I relish the idea.
You'd be a fool if you did. Zillah, fetch Mr. Lockwood a glass of brandy to revive him. And then find him some place to rest for the night.
How does your arm feel now, sir?
Some better, Zillah. But I'm still quite weak.
Ah, yes. You lost a deal of blood. Sir.
Yes?
I'm going to ask as a favor that you hide your candle and not make any noise when I take you into this room.
All right. But may I ask why?
The master doesn't know I'm putting you here. You would be strong against it. He never lets anyone in this room willingly.
Oh, what's the reason?
I'm sure I wouldn't know, sir. I've only lived here near 2 years, and they're having too many curious goings on for me to try to understand the reasons back of them. This lock's getting a bit rusty. There now. Aye. Many curious goings on.
It was indeed a strange room. The furniture consisted of a chair, a clothes press, and a bed next to a window. A few mildewed books rested on the windowsill. Before extinguishing my candle, I noticed the bedstead had writing scratched on its paint. This writing, however, was nothing but a name, repeated in all kinds of characters, large and small. Catherine Earnshaw. Here and there varied to Catherine Heathcliff. And then again to Catherine Linton. In vapid listlessness, I let my head against the window and continued repeating the name and names till I fell asleep. Or I think I fell asleep. Oh, yes, I did dream that. It couldn't have really happened. And yet I still wonder. You see, I could hear the gusty wind outside the window and the driving snow. A fir bough kept scraping against the window. It annoyed me so much, I resolved to silence it. I tried the casement, but found the hook was soldered into the staples. But I couldn't stand the noise, so I knocked my fist through the glass and stretched my arm out to grasp what I thought was the branch. But instead, my fingers closed on a small, ice-cold hand. I tried to draw my arm back, but the hand clung to it, and then a melancholy voice sobbed.
Let me! Let me!
Who are you?
Catherine Linton. I've come home. I've lost my way on the moor. Please, please, let me come in.
I'll never let you in. Not if you beg for 20 years.
It is 20 years that I've been roaming the moor.
Let go my hand. Leave me alone. Get away.
Please.
No, you're not human. Leave me alone. Leave me alone.
Is anyone in here?
It is only your guests, sir.
Oh. Confound you, Mr. Lockwood. Who showed you into this room? Tell me, who was it? I have a mind to turn them out of the house.
It was your servant, Zillah. And I shouldn't care if you did turn her out. She richly deserves it. I suppose she wanted to get another proof at my expense that this room is haunted. Well, it is, I can assure her. You have reason in shutting the room up, sir.
What do you mean? Tell me.
If the little fiend had got in at the window, she probably would have strangled me.
Who? Who?
That minx, Catherine Linton, or Earnshaw, or whoever she was called.
Kathy? What did she say?
She told me she'd been walking the earth for 20 years. Probably a just punishment for her mortal transgressions, I've no doubt.
How dare you? How dare you say such thing to me under my roof?
Why? What did I...
Mr. Lockwood, you may go into my room and finish the night. I'll join you directly. Please, go.
Gladly. I left the room. But not knowing my way about the dark corridors, I hesitated just outside the door for a moment. I saw Mr. Heathcliff go to the window, throw it wide open, and call.
Kathy, come in. Come in, Kathy. Just once more, my heart's darling. Hear me this time, Kathy, please. Kathy! Kathy!
Thrushcross Grange was a welcome sight on my return that morning. I sat before a cheerful fire with a pot of smoking coffee and thought of the evening before. When Mrs. Ellen Dean, my housekeeper, brought in my supper, I asked that she sit down while I ate it, hoping sincerely that she would prove to be somewhat of a gossip. You've lived here a considerable time, Mrs. Dean.
18 years at Thrushcross Grange, sir. I came here from Wuthering Heights when my mistress was married to wait on her.
From Wuthering Heights?
After she died, the master retained me for his housekeeper.
I see.
Times are greatly changed since then.
I suppose you've seen a good many alterations.
I have. And troubles, too.
You know, Mrs. Dean, after visiting Wuthering Heights, I find it puzzling that Mr. Heathcliff remains there rather than here at the Grange, which he also owns.
I cannot understand anything about him, sir.
It seems he would at least fix the Heights up a bit. He has enough money, I'm sure.
He has nobody knows how much money, and every year it increases. It is strange people should be so greedy when they're alone in the world.
Yes. He had a son, it seems.
Yes. He had one. He's dead.
And that young lady, Mrs. Heathcliff, is the widow?
Yes.
Where did she come from originally?
Why, sir, she is my late master's daughter. Catherine Linton was her maiden name.
What? Catherine Linton?
Yes, sir. Why do you start at the name?
No reason.
She was named after her mother, Catherine Earnshaw Linton.
Oh, I see. And her mother lived at Wuthering Heights.
That's right, sir.
Mrs. Dean, it will be a charitable deed if you tell me something of my neighbors. I'm interested in them. And I feel I shall not rest if I go to bed.
Oh, certainly, sir, if you wish it. I'll just fetch a little sewing and then I'll sit as long as you please.
The worthy woman bustled off, and I felt an excitement almost to the pitch of foolishness through my nerves and brain. When Mrs. Dean returned and took her place by the fire, she began her story. And I shall let you hear it as it was told to me.
Before I came to live here, I was at Wuthering Heights. My mother had worked there before me for the Earnshaw family. Well, one fine summer evening, it was the beginning of harvest, I remember, the children, Hindley, who was 14, and Kathy, who was barely 6, were begging their mother to let them stay up late to await their father's return from a trip to Liverpool.
Please, Mama, let us stay up just a little while longer.
Yes, please, Mama. Papa will be home soon.
But, children, it's way past your bedtime. You will see Papa in the morning.
No, tonight. He promised to bring us presents.
A fiddle for me.
And me a riding whip.
I've never seen the likes of such children. Kathy, you should certainly be abed.
No, 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 I want to stay up. I will stay up.
Listen.
What is it? Oh, it's Papa.
Papa.
So it is the traveler has returned.
Well, my family has stayed up to greet me, eh?
We wouldn't go to bed.
Mama wanted us to.
And I'm glad you stayed up. Good evening, Ellen.
Welcome home, Mr. Earnshaw.
You look tired, dear.
That I am, my dear.
What have you wrapped in your cloak?
Our presents, Papa?
Yes, yes. My riding whip.
No, not the violin or the riding whip.
Oh.
But it is a present for all of us, and we must consider it a gift from God.
Whatever is it?
I shall unveil it and show you.
Oh.
Stand up, lad. That's right.
A dirty, ragged gypsy boy. And he's quite mad at that.
You've offended him, my dear.
Why did you bring him home, Papa?
Yes, would you mind telling me what you intend doing with him?
Why, making him one of the family. What else?
You think we don't have enough on our hands with two of our own bairns to feed and fend for? You just send him back where he came from.
That I can't do because I haven't the slightest idea where he comes from. I found him in the streets of Liverpool, starving and homeless and as good as dumb. No one knew who he was. I couldn't leave him in such a pitiable state.
How he clings to Papa.
Filthy gypsy.
Quiet, Hindley.
Why, he's covered with dirt.
But a nice scrubbing will make him as clean as the rest of us. Take him away, Ellen Dean, and scrub him good. Then put him to bed with the children.
Yes, sir. Come along. Now come along, boy.
Go along with Ellen, boy. It's all right. That's
come
it. Go ahead.
Papa, I shan't sleep with such a dirty ragamuffin.
You hold your tongue, Hindley. But for the grace of God, it might have been you walking the streets of Liverpool alone and hungry. From now on, you will treat him as your brother.
Huh. What's his name, Papa?
I don't know that either.
But we shall have to call him something.
I have thought of a name for him. We shall christen him Heathcliff.
Heathcliff?
Exactly.
I like the name. Heathcliff. Heathcliff.
Heathcliff was all the name he ever had. It served him for both Christian and surname. Well, before any time at all, Miss Cathy and he became devoted to each other. They spent long hours of every day romping over the moors together. But with Hindley, it was a different matter. He hated Heathcliff. And after the death of Mr. and Mrs. Earnshaw, Hindley let the full force of his hatred be felt. He was newly married when his father passed on, and he set himself up as a master of the house and ordered Heathcliff to be treated as a servant, forbidding Miss Cathy to have anything to do with him, though little attention she paid to that. Why, the two of them promised fair to grow up as rude as savages.
I remember one Sunday evening when Hindley came into the kitchen to call Kathy to supper.
Kathy, how many times must I tell you to come to table immediately when dinner is in a... And what, may I ask, are you doing with that ruffian?
I'm teaching Heathcliff what the curate taught me yesterday, since you've forbidden him any more education.
Kathy, don't... I forbade his education because it isn't necessary for sniveling servants to put on learned airs. And I don't intend that you shall go against my orders.
Heathcliff isn't a servant. If Father were alive, he wouldn't allow you...
Silence! I'm the master here, and I'll not have you forgetting. And you... You dirty gypsy, I'll flog you within an inch of your life for sitting in here by the fire when you should be out tending to the cattle.
Hindley, put down that broom.
Don't worry, Kathy. He doesn't hurt me.
Oh, you think not? Why, you insolent cur, we'll see if I hurt you or not.
No, you shot me.
Out of my way. Get to your room and stay there. I'll flog you as well.
I won't go.
Go to your room, I say.
Please go, Kathy.
She doesn't take orders from you, but from me. Now, get out of here. Now, let's see if I hurt you or not. How does this feel, eh? How does this feel? Kathy, I was afraid you wouldn't be able to slip out.
There's nothing that would keep me away from you, Heathcliff.
Did Hindley lock you in your room?
Yes, he did, but I climbed out the window and down the side of the wall. It's lucky the stones are so uneven. They're almost like steps. Oh, Heathcliff, he must have hurt you terribly.
No, Kathy.
Oh, but your shirt is all torn, and there are great black spots on your back and arms. Oh, my poor Heathcliff.
The bruises only hurt me, Kathy, when they give you pain. Please, don't think about them. I can stand anything but to see you unhappy. We're on our moors now. We're away from Hindley and everyone.
Oh, I'm sorry, Heathcliff. I forgot. We promised to forget everything else when we were together in our world. Oh, nothing can hurt us here together.
Oh, Kathy, if I could only keep you from ever being hurt.
Now you're the one who's being sad. Come on, I'll race you across the moors. I can beat you.
Oh, no, you can't.
You caught me, but only because I lost my shoes in the bog.
Maybe you're right at that, Kathy. You can run like the wind. You want to go back to the bog and look for your shoes?
No, we'll get them later. I love to walk barefoot anyway. Oh, well, look, Heathcliff. We ran a very long way. There's Thrushcross Grange just over there.
Oh, so it is, where the Linton family lives.
They have a son and daughter just about our age. Heathcliff.
What, Kathy?
Let's walk over and peep in the windows of the Grange and see how they live. I'll bet the Lentons don't treat their children the way Hindley treats us.
I will if you want to, Kathy.
Oh, I do. Look, we can crawl right through this broken place to the hedge here. Come on. Keith, I have my hair caught on the thorn in the bush.
Oh, I'll untangle it. There.
Thank you. Now, we must be quiet, else they'll see us. What fun!
Oh, there's a flower box under this window. We can stand on it and see in quite clearly.
Oh, Heathcliff, have you ever seen such a beautiful room?
Oh, the whole room is carpeted with crimson, with crimson-colored chairs and tables.
And the ceiling has a gold border. Those are the children. Standing by the table there.
And dressed like a prince and princess.
I'm going to hang on to this window ledge and raise myself up a bit so I can see the rest of the room.
Well, be careful. This flower box isn't too steady. Oh, Kathy, look out. The box is falling. Are you hurt, Kathy?
Of course not. Take more than the silly old flower box to hit me. Heathcliff, we do look so funny.
Listen.
Oh, they're coming.
Oh, we'll run for it.
Clubbing, off running.
Two thieves.
After them, Skulker.
Run, the bulldog's caught me. You go.
No, Kathy, I won't leave you. Oh, he's bitten your ankle. You filthy cur.
Keep fast, Skulker. Keep fast. We have them now.
Why, it's only a little girl and a lad. Though the boy does look like a little villain.
Keep away from me, you witch.
Oh.
You've hurt Kathy.
Such language.
Hold your tongue, boy.
What a frightful thing he is. Put him in the cellar, Papa. He's exactly like the son of the fortune teller who stole my tame pheasant, isn't he, Edgar?
Papa, it's Miss Earnshaw.
Miss Earnshaw? Nonsense, Edgar. Miss Earnshaw scouring the country with a gypsy?
I've seen her at church on Sundays.
I say, my dear, are you Miss Earnshaw?
Stop, prisoner.
Yes.
Can't you fools see she's hurt bad?
You wicked boy.
Skulker did bite her leg deeply, my dear. She may be maimed for life. Oh, this is terrible.
Oh, we must take her into the house at once and bandage the ankle.
Yes, I'll carry her.
Keep your hands off her.
Get away, boy. Be off.
I won't go without Kathy.
Ah, now I know who this fellow is. The vagabond child Mr. Earnshaw picked up on a journey to Liverpool.
I tell you, I won't go back without Kathy.
But don't you see she can't return with you now? She isn't able to walk.
Go on back without me, Heathcliff. Explain to Ellen Dean what has happened, and she will know how to tell Hindley. Oh, Heathcliff, why do you look so sad?
I don't want you to go into that house, Kathy. I'm afraid you'll never be the same again.
Stop your talk and get home, boy. You go ahead, my dear, and prepare bandages. I'll carry Miss Earnshaw in. Do you feel comfortable enough, my dear?
Kathy. Kathy.
For all his wild ways, Heathcliff was a sensitive boy. And his fear about Miss Kathy came true, though it was certainly better for her. It took 5 weeks for her ankle to heal, which time she spent at Thrushcross Grange. And when she returned to Wuthering Heights, she was indeed a greatly changed little lady.
Wuthering Heights by Emily Bronte is one of the world's great novels brought to you each week by the National Broadcasting Company. We invite you to listen next week to the second episode of Wuthering Heights and suggest that you visit your local public library very soon. To enhance your enjoyment of this series, we recommend the Handbook of the World's Great Novels, which you may obtain by sending 25 cents to World's Great Novels, Post Office Box 30, Station J, New York 27, New York. That's Post Office Box 30, Station J, New York 27. Wuthering Heights is adapted for radio by Agnes Eckhart. The music was composed by Emil Soderstrom, and the orchestra was directed by Bernard Berquist. The entire production was under the direction of Homer Heck. Bill Fine and Boris Aplon are featured as the younger and elder Heathcliff, and Martha McCain as Kathy Earnshaw. Ellen Dean is played by Geraldine Kay, and Mr. Lockwood by Jonathan Hole. Catherine Linton is played by Jean Mowry. Zilla by Hilda Graham. Mrs. Earnshaw by Minion Schreiber. Isabella by Florine Sears. Mr. Earnshaw by George Kluge. Hindley by Jim Humland, and Harrington by Charles Mountain. This is John Conrad. This program comes to you from Chicago and is a presentation of the National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.